Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I am reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, September 5th, 2021. I'm reading on Thursday, September 9th. I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for September 2021. Published September 8th. Tom Green County, as of September 8th, City of San Angelo, 22,757 positive cases reported, 149 new positive tests, deaths 381, 248 from Tom Green County and 133 from other counties. 71 currently hospitalized, 1,916 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker by Diane Patelio. Tom Green County has administered more than 95,097 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of September 7th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 2.17% from the previous week's tally of 93,075 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 38% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of September 7th. Railway Museum of San Angelo looking for volunteers for a haunted house by Linda Thorson Bond. Special to the San Angelo Standard Times. Published September 8th. Help haunt the historic Railway Museum of San Angelo. Ghosts and ghouls are needed for Scare Station, a haunt that will bring 100 years of San Angelo's history to life and death. Volunteers are invited to become scare artists while helping raise funds for this landmark location. The event is at the Railway Museum of San Angelo from 8 p.m. to midnight, October 14th through the 31st, except Mondays when it will be closed. There will be double casting, so local performers won't have to work every night. The museum is also looking for volunteers to help behind the scenes and at the door. Producer and writer Shelby Bond has been creating interactive theatrical experiences for over 20 years, producing live entertainment for over 700,000 people on three continents. In 2019, he terrified audiences in the immersive recreation of It Chapter 2, House in Hollywood, produced by New Line Cinema, as he appeared as both a ringmaster guide and Pennywise. In 2020, he worked with one of the nation's largest lockdown Halloween events, Haunt-O-Ween, in Los Angeles. While working in experimental theater in London, he created a haunt that simply refuses to be put into tidy little categories, media-geeks.com. Horror.net said the Shadow Space manages to invent a rather brilliant format. This event was a near sellout 6 nights a week for 3 months, ending when the pandemic shut down performances. Bond will be working with an award-winning L.A. costume designer for the San Angelo show, which will be based on characters who lived and died in West Texas. People who would like to get involved can email Bond at shelbybond@gmail.com and get ready to help create an amazing, scary event. Taste of San Angelo returns to satisfy local foodies. By Colin Murphy, published September 8th. Taste buds eager to sample local culinary excellence were quenched on Tuesday at the Spur Arena as the Taste of San Angelo event returned after a year off due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Hundreds of people attended the event, taking advantage of the multitude of vendors on hand, providing everything from barbecue to roasted turkey to snow cones. Kelly McGowan of McGowan Catering said he was impressed with the turnout to the event. "We're busy. There's a good crowd here tonight," McGowan said. "For the situation we're in, I think it's a really good turnout. It's nice to be out and doing stuff. It kind of feels like old times, which is a good feeling." The 46th Taste of San Angelo event featured a wide range of culinary concoctions with chefs on hand to talk to customers about their food. The event also included members of the Central High School Culinary Program, representing the future of local cuisine in the Concho Valley. Second man takes plea deal in 2019 San Angelo Red Roof Inn murder by Elena Edgen, published September 7th. A second man pleaded guilty Tuesday for his role in a 2019 murder at San Angelo's Red Roof Inn. At 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, September 7th, 2021, Daniel Nakia Diaz, 26, from Ballinger, attended a plea hearing with the 391st District Court over Zoom. Diaz was one of three people, two of whom were from Abilene, indicted in connection to the July 2019 murder of Gilbert Mascoro, 32. He also had a motion to revoke on a 2018 crash that killed a man and injured three people in downtown San Angelo. Diaz pleaded true to the motion to revoke and guilty to the murder charge. In exchange for his plea, the state attorney recommended 20 years in jail on the murder charge and a $10,100 restitution and 10 years on the evasion charge from 2018, which would be served concurrently. Diaz will still have to pay $69,673.31 in restitution from the 2018 case, as no payments had been made at the time of the Tuesday hearing. Judge Brad Goodwin followed the state's recommendation, including restitution and sentences in the two cases. On July 7th, 2019, police responded to a shooting at the Red Roof Inn on South Bryant Boulevard and discovered Mascoro fatally shot. Police arrested an Abilene man and woman 2 days later after a traffic stop in Abilene. Around 4:45 a.m. July 9th, police conducted a traffic stop at North 6th and Fannin Streets in Abilene. Police approached Jesse Wayne Robinson Jr., the passenger, who was known to have an outstanding parole violation warrant. Robinson left the vehicle, attempted to run away, and threw a bag of 4.26 grams of methamphetamine, record state. Jennifer Badillo was arrested on unrelated charges in the traffic stop and later charged with murder. Diaz returned to Tom Green County Detention Center months into his deferred adjudication sentence under a motion to revoke. Investigators said he violated his probation by being with Robinson on July 7th, the day Mascoro was killed. The motion also stated he had methamphetamine with intent to distribute and failed to make a diligent effort to get employment. Robinson Jr. pleaded guilty to his role in the shooting on March 3rd, 2020, and was sentenced to 40 years in jail. A court date has not been scheduled for Badillo as of 10:15 a.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. Man charged after woman threatened with gun, injured in San Angelo, by Elena Edgen, published September 7th. A man has been arrested after a mother and daughter were injured and threatened with a rifle in San Angelo, according to an arrest affidavit released Tuesday. On Friday, September 3rd, police received a report of a man with a weapon in the 1200 block of Howard Street. An officer discovered the man had assaulted two women, one by forcing a relative out of the residence and slamming a door on their leg, record state. The man also pointed an automatic rifle at the mother and daughter, who went to the residence to get the mother's possessions. When the daughter entered the residence, the man tried to grab her phone and pointed a rifle at her face before forcing her out, according to the affidavit. While at the residence, the man pointed the rifle at the mother's stomach and slapped her face, record state. Curtis Lee Moore, 44, was arrested Friday on suspicion of two counts of aggravated assault of a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $100,000 bond as of 11:15 a.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. Former San Angelo juvenile probation officer enters plea deal after child porn found, by Elena Edgen, published September 7th. A former San Angelo juvenile probation officer entered a plea bargain Tuesday over a year after hundreds of child porn images were found on a computer while he was working. Senior Judge Lee Hamilton of the 104th District Court in Taylor County presided over the hearing at the 340th District Court at 9:15 a.m. Tuesday, September 7th. John Russell Cahill Jr. was indicted on two counts of possession of child pornography. Cahill pleaded guilty to both counts. In exchange for his plea, the state's attorneys suggested a sentence of 10 years deferred adjudication, a type of probation that could help him avoid conviction if he follows the conditions of his probation. The officer also suggested 180 days in jail, a fine of $2,500, and lifetime registration as a sex offender. Hamilton followed the state's recommended sentence and reminded Cahill that he must follow the conditions or he could be convicted. One condition is that you don't commit any new offenses and, most importantly, never commit an offense of this type ever again, Hamilton said. If you follow these conditions, you'll be able to be free, won't go to prison, and will have the opportunity to learn from all of this. These offenses do not have to define you as a person. I want to give you reason to have hope for the future. Facebook ads lead to child porn. On May 14, 2019, an officer received a tip that a Facebook marketing company logged on to a client's computer to check advertisement performance. During this, they discovered someone used the computer to view what they considered to be child pornography. It was photos of children in sexually provocative positions wearing highly inappropriate clothing, online records state. A month later, special agents found the house where the computer was located. Cahill admitted to being on the computer at the time the company saw the photos. He told agents he was on his lunch break from his job as a juvenile probation officer in San Angelo. A search of the computer revealed hundreds of images depicting child pornography, according to court records. Cahill said he downloaded the pictures but deleted them because he knew they were illegal. Cahill was arrested February 10, 2020, on suspicion of possession of child pornography. He was released on a $15,000 bond about 3 hours later. An indictment, filed in February, charged him with two counts of possession of child pornography. These charges are third-degree felonies, punishable by up to 10 years in jail, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Staff Shortage, a Challenge for City of San Angelo Recreation Department, by Brent Casey, City of San Angelo, published September 6th. San Angelo Recreation, along with the rest of us in our field, made it through summer 2021. We had our challenges, but overall, the summer went pretty well. Staff shortages was one of our biggest issues. We had less than half the summer staff we need for our programs. We simply did not have as many people apply for positions as we normally do. The staff shortage is not something happening just in San Angelo. This is an issue across the United States. Many pools and camps were not able to open at all this summer due to a shortage of lifeguards and staff. I must say, although we did have to shorten our municipal pool hours, our lifeguards who worked this summer did a great job. The pool looked great, and people had a safe place to cool off from the West Texas heat. Our pool manager this summer previously worked for us when he was just 15 years old. He did a great job on his return to the aquatics world. He managed the few staff he had, making things work for the best and keeping all customers safe. We hired a new supervisor shortly prior to the pool opening. She also did a great job this summer, jumping in and showing she was not afraid to get her hands dirty, as you must sometimes when working with pools. Summer camps also went well. Again, we were short on staff, but our employees did a great job and kept the kids busy this entire summer. Since we did not have transportation due to COVID guidelines, we made some changes and used our resources to our advantage. We were able to change the locations the parents dropped off the kids and get them to the pool, to the river to fish, and to the historic Fort Concho for tours. Our staff worked hard and spent some time in the heat, but but they had a great time. We are looking forward to getting back to more of a normal year for Summer Camp 2022. Summer track went great as well. We had a great turnout showing at the state meet. Many participants brought back hardware and won at the state level. If you are a track fan, then I would check out some of the local talent we have here in San Angelo. We have some that dominate their sport, and it is inspiring to watch. Who knows? We may have some future Olympic prospects soon representing San Angelo. We were able to open the senior services back up for our seniors. We provide exercise, ceramics, a nutrition program, special guests to check blood pressure, incentive programs to keep our seniors motivated and moving, and of course, if I did not mention our art group, I would probably get in trouble. We have many talented artists come on Tuesdays and share their work and experience in the art world. They decorate the walls with beautiful artwork and are all appreciated. Looking ahead, we have our famed Texas Amateur Athletic Federation Flag Football League about to begin. We're checking for any updates daily and will follow all guidelines that change during the season. We want the kids to play. We have a record number of 99 teams signed up for our flag football this year. We want the season to go on as safely as possible and want all participants to remain healthy and have a great time, learning all the things being part of a team may teach a young person. I could not go on without thanking the many volunteer coaches we have for our upcoming season. You all mean the world to us and the kids you are teaching. We are looking forward to working together. For more information on the San Angelo Recreation Division, please check COSATX.US/recreation. We are looking forward to getting past the pandemic entirely, but until then, stay safe and play safe. Brent Casey is the recreation manager for the City of San Angelo. Contact him at brent.casey@COSATX.US or by phone at 325-657-4450. San Angelo labor force bouncing back after record unemployment in 2020. From Staff Reports, published September 4th. As San Angelo residents celebrate this Labor Day holiday weekend, those watching the local economy have another reason to be jubilant. Unemployment for the area has dropped to nearly pre-pandemic levels. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics listed the unemployment rate in San Angelo at 5.1% for July 2021, a nearly 48% difference from this same time last year. In 2020, the coronavirus pandemic inflicted the worst economic freeze since the end of World War II, according to a report by the Associated Press. The national economy shrank 3.5%, triggering a recession as tens of millions of Americans were left jobless. While San Angelo fared better than the state average, Texas climbed to a seasonally adjusted unemployment rate of 11.6% in May 2021, the local economy still took a wallop. In March 2020, San Angelo had an unemployment rate estimated at 4.4%, 1,960 people, according to the Texas Workforce Commission. In April and May, the area saw record unemployment levels that climbed into the double digits, 10.7%, with between 4,300 to 4,500 people out of work. By July 2021, San Angelo's civilian labor workforce was just north of 45,000 people, with 2,355 people listed as unemployed. Despite a recent surge of COVID-19, the economic forecast for San Angelo continues to look promising. In June, Governor Greg Abbott signed a bill establishing the I-27 Advisory Committee, which will continue discussions on the Ports to Plains Interstate, that officials see as a vital move for San Angelo's continued economic growth. Work also continues on the San Angelo Rail Port, designed to augment the Texas Pacifico Railroad's South Orient Rail Line by providing rail freight services to local San Angelo customers, according to an annual economic report by the city. The San Angelo area also continues to attract new businesses and has been consistently ranked as one of the best small cities for business and employment, frequently earning positive mentions from Forbes. San Angelo woman married to Afghan fighter pilot prays for husband's safe return. By John Tufts, published September 3rd. Home for one stranded Afghan fighter pilot hiding from Islamic militants is the West Texas community of San Angelo, where his wife and mother-in-law have spent months working through government red tape to ensure his safe return. To get there, he will have to outlast both the Taliban and delays caused by the immigration process of the United States, a system his American family and a conservative U.S. congressman from Texas are battling. "We're trying to get my son-in-law home to San Angelo," said Terry, the Afghan pilot's mother-in-law. "This has been very, very hard," said Jerry, his wife. "It's life or death. Every day I'm on edge. It's hard to work and do normal life things without feeling guilty." Editor's note, the Standard Times has chosen not to name the Afghan pilot, publish his photo, or use the full names of his wife and mother-in-law out of an abundance of caution for their continued safety. Terry said her son-in-law served in Afghanistan as a translator and linguist. He later arrived in the United States to become a combat pilot. He met Jerry, her daughter, in San Antonio. "He was studying English at Lackland Air Force Base," Jerry said. "My best friend introduced us, and we really connected. We're from two different countries, but we're exactly the same. We're outgoing, we like to have fun, we like to travel." Jerry said she had other friends living in San Antonio who were also from Afghanistan, allowing her to connect with him on a shared love of Afghan culture. The couple's first date took place at a restaurant. They married a year later in May 2019. It was a small courtroom ceremony that began their lives together. A decades-long war would force them apart. After completing his pilot's training at an Air Force base in Georgia, Jerry's husband returned to Afghanistan in December 2020 to join other pilots flying combat missions against insurgents. The Taliban suffered heavy losses by American and NATO-trained Afghan pilots who bombarded militants and provided air support to Afghan ground forces. While Jerry's husband served overseas, the couple worked on securing a marriage visa, a document that became more important as word began circulating U.S. troops might leave Afghanistan. Terry said she remembered having an unsettling conversation with her son-in-law in January 2021. He said rumors were spreading that American forces would leave and the Taliban would take over, Terry said. 4 months later, the rumors turned out to be true. Afghan fighter pilot arrived in Kabul hours before the Taliban. On April 14th, U.S. President Joe Biden announced it was time to end America's longest war during a speech at the White House. Biden said U.S. troops would leave Afghanistan by September 11th, the anniversary of the attacks by Al-Qaeda that prompted the invasion two decades ago. The Biden administration later moved the deadline to August 31st. Taliban fighters began to mobilize after Biden's announcement along key roads and cities, and by August 8th had seized their first province along Afghanistan's southern border with Iran, according to the Associated Press. Most of the Afghan forces fled, allowing the Taliban to control more territory as cities continued to fall. By mid-August, Jerry was granted a marriage visa interview in San Antonio, a crucial step in getting her husband home to the United States. Her mother, Terry, said the interview was completed by August 13th. 2 days later, the Afghan government collapsed. Taliban forces swept into the capital city of Kabul and seized power by August 15th, following an exodus of high-ranking state officials who joined others fleeing Afghanistan. Heavily armed Taliban fighters fanned out onto city streets, ready to quash any resistance, according to the Associated Press. Terry said her son-in-law arrived in Kabul hours before the Taliban. Stories by international news organizations suggest he had every reason to fear for his life. Afghan pilots were being assassinated in Kabul by insurgents months before the Taliban reclaimed power, according to Reuters. A Taliban spokesperson confirmed to Reuters that off-duty pilots were being targeted and eliminated. In July, a 41-year-old Afghan pilot, fearful of being assassinated, tried to sell his home to move his family to a safer part of Kabul. He was shot in the head by a prospective buyer who also shot the Afghan pilot's real estate agent, Reuters reported. The Taliban later claimed responsibility for their deaths. As militants brandishing machine guns marched through the streets of Kabul, Terry said her son-in-law took shelter at a nearby base. He called my daughter at 3 a.m. to say everyone had fled the base except for 13 pilots and their commander, and that the Taliban was knocking on the door, Terry said as she recounted their conversation. This is it. We're probably going to die, her son-in-law said. There's nobody here to save us. Nobody is coming, and the Taliban is outside the gate. He told her he loved her. Then the phone line went dead. For the next 24 hours, we didn't know if he was dead or alive, she said. Jerry received a phone call from her husband the next day. He was in Uzbekistan. He and the other pilots had flown over Afghanistan's northern border under the cover of darkness after their commander had given them two options: either stay on base and risk capture and execution, or fly their planes to safety. He is still stranded in Uzbekistan. Jerry's husband is still stranded in Uzbekistan as of Friday, September 3rd. Getting him to the United States will depend on efforts by the U.S. State Department. Spurring them on is a conservative lawmaker from Texas, Congressman August Pfluger, who represents the San Angelo area. Terry reached out to Pfluger's office for help in January 2021 when rumors circulated of the Taliban's return to power. We've been working on this now for several weeks with very little movement out of the State Department, Pfluger said during an interview with the Standard Times. For Pfluger, a former U.S. Air Force fighter pilot who flew combat missions in Iraq, helping Jerry's husband is more than just being a constituent. It's personal. There's over 1,000 total people, consisting of pilots and their family members, inside Afghanistan that haven't made it out yet. The Taliban are hunting them down every single day, Pfluger said, noting the United States needed to help both them and Americans get home. In the meantime, Terry said her son-in-law has spent about 3 weeks in Uzbekistan and is being treated well, but tensions are running high as he waits in limbo for the U.S. State Department to make headway on his immigration status. Uzbekistan government officials are under tremendous pressure from the Taliban to return these folks to Afghanistan, Pfluger said. However, our office and State Department personnel has received numerous assurances from across the government of Uzbekistan that no aircraft or individuals will be repatriated against their will. For now, there is no traveling between Afghanistan and Uzbekistan. The Uzbek-Afghan border is completely closed for security reasons, and there is no land crossing at the Termez checkpoint, said the Uzbekistan Foreign Ministry Affairs Office in a statement released August 30th. The city of Termez, 136,200 estimated population in 2014, in Surkhandara, Uzbekistan, sits along the northern border of Afghanistan and is where many Afghan refugees have taken shelter. While its Foreign Ministry Affairs Office said there are no plans to reopen the border in the near future, Uzbek officials say the country is grappling with taking care of Afghan refugees while maintaining peaceful relations with the Taliban. The Uzbek side reaffirms its firm commitment to the development of traditionally friendly and good neighborly relations with Afghanistan and non-interference in the internal affairs of the neighboring country, said Foreign Ministry Affairs Office. Pfluger said Uzbekistan officials want the Afghans out as quickly as possible. Nearly 2 weeks ago, about 150 Afghans voluntarily left Termez and returned to their native country, according to a report by Reuters. The Uzbekistan Foreign Ministry Office said it worked with the Taliban to ensure the safety of the Afghans who left, stating in a release they were returned to their homes after formal proceedings. Pfluger's office said out of the more than 150 Afghans who left, 26 were from an airplane group and mostly low-level Afghan national security forces, six of whom were detained by the Taliban after returning. As of Thursday, August 31st, Pfluger said there are 46 fixed-wing and rotary military aircraft on the ground in Uzbekistan, along with 496 Afghans taking refuge from the Taliban in the city of Termez. "We've been pressing the State Department, including direct conversations with Secretary Blinken and Deputy Secretary Wendy Sherman, to make sure that we get these folks vetted and approved and sent to a third country or to their final destination in the United States," Pfluger said. How long the vetting process might take remains unknown, and movement from the State Department has been slow, Pfluger said. "We've spent a lot of time crying and praying." Terry said the process of getting her son-in-law home to San Angelo would normally follow consular procedures in Afghanistan, which she said is likely impossible. Complicating the process is how much longer her son-in-law might stay in Uzbekistan before leaving to a third country. "It's just one big, gigantic mess," Terry said. "He's safe at least, but he has family in Afghanistan, a sister, brothers, parents, other relatives with babies. He's very worried about them. They're moving from house to house because if they get found, the Taliban might kill them because of their connection to him. We've spent a lot of time crying and praying," Terry said. Since August 14th, the United States has evacuated or helped facilitate the evacuation of nearly 90,000 people from Afghanistan. But the process of immigrating to the United States isn't simple. Vetting applicants, paperwork, and other bureaucracy, as well as the logistics of travel, has caused setbacks for many Afghans. On average, it takes 10 to 38 months to get a marriage green card, according to immigrationhelp.org. The amount of time depends on a variety of factors, which include who submits the application, where and when they file, and whether the spouse is inside or outside the United States. The average time for a U.S. citizen filing for a spouse in Texas is 6 to 8 months, according to immigrationhelp.org. "Immigration is very rough and very slow," Jerry said, who noted she's developed more empathy toward immigrants and their families because she's sharing their frustrations as well. As both Jerry and Terry worry about their in-laws in Afghanistan, they credit Pfluger with putting pressure on the State Department to both expedite and sort the process out. "I can't say anything but praise for Congressman Pfluger," Terry said. "He and his team have been working around the clock, calling and texting us at all hours, telling us what's going on. We're very thankful to have him on our side." Pfluger said, "Efforts to ensure the safety of the Afghan pilots were ongoing and that he would continue pushing the State Department for Jerry's husband for a flight that will take him back to San Angelo." While Jerry doesn't know when exactly her husband will get home, she already has a plan for what they'll do when that happens. "We're going to have a huge celebration and we want to have a public wedding," Jerry said. "We had to go to court to get married. We want to have it public." After 20 years of the United States at war in Afghanistan, Terry and Jerry feel Afghan interpreters are owed a debt. "They're good people with good hearts that have sacrificed a lot to keep our people safe," Terry said. "Now it's our turn to take care of them." More rain means more toads in the Concho Valley, by Selena McSherry, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published September 3rd. The month of August brought rain, lots of it. With recent rainfalls in the Concho Valley, you might see a toad or two hopping around near puddles, and you most certainly have heard them calling in the late evening and nights. There are a variety of different toads in Texas, including Gulf Coast toads, Texas toads, Couch's spadefoot toads, and narrow-mouthed toads. Couch's spadefoot toads, Mucinex, and Claritin are the two newest additions to the Nature Center collection. They were picked up by Nature Center naturalist Bailey Wilberg mid-August after the heavy rainfalls in San Angelo. Having lived underground throughout the winter and during hot summer days, these slimy-skinned amphibians come out in large numbers after a heavy rainfall. All those croaking noises that you hear are actually mating calls. Toads like Mucinex and Claritin will sound their unique calls in the late evening with hopes of attracting a mate. This is how the fascinating four-stage life cycle, or metamorphosis, of a toad begins. First, the female toads will lay their eggs in water. One female alone can lay as many as 3,000 eggs. They then must hatch quickly before the winter source dries up. On most occasions, it only takes 15 hours for the eggs to hatch and tadpoles to begin metamorphosis. Sometimes, by as little as 9 days, tadpoles will transform into toadlets. Finally, these toadlets will complete the life cycle by growing into adult toads. Unfortunately, only a handful of eggs will accomplish the full transformation. Once the rain dries up and the weather begins to change, the toads will burrow back underground. During the winter months, they go into hibernation, patiently waiting for another downpour. Though we usually don't see this fascinating life cycle as it happens, the unique calls and loud snores of toads are a reminder of the growth and development in living things. And despite the weather in Texas being unpredictable, one thing is certain. If rainfall continues in the Concho Valley, we can toadily expect to see these guys around for a while. Selena McSherry is the Nature Center Coordinator for the City of San Angelo. Contact her at 325-942-0121 or Selena, S-E-L-I-N-A, dot McSherry, M-C-S-H-E-R-R-Y, at COSATX.US. San Angelo Entrepreneur adds artistic touch to everyday apparel. By Colin Murphy. Published September 3rd. In the newly opened Big Lou's Customs Design Shop in the Jackson Square Shopping Center on Sherwood Way, Lou Pavin sits down at a small desk, surrounded by a palette of colorful bottles of paint, a set of brushes, and an unusual canvas. After only a few minutes of delicate work with a tiny paintbrush in Pavin's hands, the face of legendary martial artist and actor Bruce Lee starts to take shape, not on a traditional stretched canvas, but on the side of a shoe. "Anything is a canvas to me," Pavin said. "I focus on painting unconventional surfaces. I do a lot of jackets, hats, shoes, helmets. I paint football and sports apparel. A little bit of everything." Pavin's specialty is taking the blank canvas of a pair of shoes, a hat, helmets, skateboards, or t-shirts, and turning them into works of art for customers who want a little extra color and a flair on their gear. Pavin said he started painting apparel for friends during the COVID quarantine period in 2020, and after an increase in demand for his work, he decided to venture into the world of small business. "I've been doing this my whole life just for myself," Pavin said. "I was just sitting at home during quarantine and trying to figure out how to bring in some extra revenue. So I decided to give it a shot. I painted a pair of boots I had and posted some photos, and a friend hit me up and asked if I could do the same for some shoes for them. It just took off from there. It was kind of a chain reaction." After only a few months working out of his home, Pavin decided to take the leap and set up a shop and design studio. At Big Lou's Customs, clients can bring in something they want decorated, or they can choose from an in-store inventory of items to customize. Pavin said he plans to run the business according to a philosophy that big things often originate from small beginnings. The plan is to continue on social media, but the main focus is on the shop, Pavin said. I want this to be a place where people can come in and pick up some of the blank inventory that I have here and customize it for them. I can customize anything. I just want people to come by the shop and see what I can do. Pavin's shop can be found at 3124 Sherwood Way or on the Big Lou's custom Facebook page. The shop can be reached by phone at 325-650-6207. Ted Cruz in Abilene. Consequences mount for U.S. pullout in Afghanistan and open border. By Greg Jaklowitz, Abilene Reporter News. Published September 2nd. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz looked comfortable in the summer heat in his light blue blazer. But in Abilene on Thursday afternoon, he heated up when talking about the recent pullout of American forces in Afghanistan and crisis at the Texas-Mexico border. In turn, he put the heat on President Joe Biden. Joe Biden's disastrous failure in Afghanistan and the flood of immigrants into the U.S. and their release here are connected, said the senior senator from Texas. There's an odd parallel between the disaster on our southern border and the disaster in Afghanistan, Cruz said. Both were caused by a combination of ideological extremism and manifest incompetence. Cruz was in town for a briefing at Dyess Air Force Base, then met city leaders and the media downtown at Community Foundation of Abilene. Taking aim on Afghanistan. On Monday, a minute before the August 31st deadline, the U.S. exited Afghanistan, ending a 20-year presence in the war-torn nation. Immediately, Taliban forces took control. Efforts to evacuate Americans and Afghan citizens loyal to allied efforts in their country failed, Cruz said. The senator said there are reports that the president made a list of people who needed to leave, and it was given to the Taliban. To the best of my knowledge, the Biden administration has neither confirmed or denied that report, Cruz said. I hope it's not true, because if it is true, it's an illustration of ideological extremism and naivete. If President Biden gave the Taliban a list of Americans and, worse, and a list of Afghans who we say were really helpful to us, it's hard to imagine that list being anything other than a kill list. For the Taliban to now go down that list to target each and every name that was on that list. Cruz said the president promised Americans would be taken out of the country. Joe Biden broke that promise, he said. Hundreds of Americans have been left behind. America doesn't leave Americans behind enemy lines. I believe we should have stayed and we should have devoted the forces and resources necessary to evacuate every single American who wanted to come home. The consequences of Joe Biden's total surrender to the Taliban, right now the Taliban is flying their flag over the U.S. embassy, they control the Bagram airfield, they're flying Black Hawk helicopters from the U.S. military, they're carrying American Army machine guns, they have night vision goggles from the U.S. military. Cruz said 75,000 vehicles, including armored personnel carriers, 200 aircraft, and 600,000 weapons, including grenade launchers and rifles, were provided and spent more than $80 billion to the Afghan army. These weapons and equipment will be used by the Taliban to attack Americans and our allies, to brutalize the people of Afghanistan, and to compromise our military operations, he said. They are already reaping the rewards and propaganda by parading around in captured American materials. Congress will need to act expeditiously but thoroughly to understand the full extent of this latest catastrophe and address the acute national security risks that it poses. Cruz called the situation a disaster that will continue to cost American lives and embolden U.S. enemies, including Russia and China. Our enemies are far more likely to engage in military aggression, he said, giving a Chinese amphibious assault on Taiwan is an example. China now believes Joe Biden is not up for the task and won't do anything significant to prevent Chinese military aggression. That makes the lives of Americans far more vulnerable and makes the world much more dangerous. The Afghanistan disaster, Cruz said again, was driven entirely by politics. Biden wanted to give a speech September 11th, and so he ordered the military to evacuate because of my political deadline. The danger Americans in Afghanistan didn't change that deadline. The danger our servicemen and women didn't change that political deadline. Cruz said there likely will be hearing in Congress into the pullout, but don't expect impeachment efforts. However, we said there's talk that the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff could be fired. I think those trial balloons were largely dictated to try to insulate the political decision-making of the White House, Cruz said. The decision-makers were driving the train, he said, and who bear the ultimate responsibility. Bedlam at the border. Cruz said it's the government's responsibility to protect the nation from terrorists abroad and to protect us from violence here at home. Open borders and abolishing police, he said, do not protect Americans. Those are profoundly jeopardizing the safety of our families and communities. Cruz said he spent 2 days on the Texas-Mexico border and saw utter chaos. We have an immigration crisis caused by Joe Biden, he said. The president has handled over the U.S. agenda to the open border radicals. Cruz said more than 1 million immigrants have crossed the border illegally in 7 months. That could be 2 million by the end of the year, he said, the highest number in 21 years. He said the rate of COVID positivity tops 22% among children at the border. COVID positive immigrants are being released into Texas, he said. Like Afghanistan, this is jeopardizing our safety and security, Cruz said. At our southern border, we have a national security crisis, a public health crisis, and a humanitarian crisis. Asked about immigrant release in Abilene, which was confirmed last month, Cruz said people illegally in the U.S. are surrendering at the border and flown all over the country, Abilene or anywhere else. Cruz said there is total operational control of the border, but it's on the southern side. The cartels have 100% control. Nobody crosses the border without paying the cartels, he said. Those coming to America looking for freedom instead are placed in stash houses so they can pay back fees, $3,000 to $8,000 owed to get them into the U.S., he said. It is indentured servitude. The open border advocates that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have empowered, they say their policy is humane and compassionate. Well, nobody who's seen the children being abused by these violent criminals can think for a moment that it is anything but barbaric and inhuman. San Angelo named fastest growing Texas city for COVID-19 cases by Elena Edgen, published September 2nd. San Angelo has been named the fastest growing city for COVID-19 in Texas, according to a report by 247wallst.com. On Thursday, September 2nd, city officials reported 129 new cases of COVID-19, bringing the total of active cases to 1,929 in Tom Green County. Thursday's data did not factor in that report, which used numbers from August 24th through the 30th. In the San Angelo metropolitan area, there was an average of 155.0 daily new coronavirus cases per 100,000 residents in the week ending August 30th, the fastest case growth of any city in Texas, the report stated. The metro area's most recent case growth rate is an increase from the week prior, when there was an average 78.0 daily new cases per 100,000 residents. From February 2020 to August 30th, 2021, San Angelo had 21,117 cases, which factored out to 17,947 per 100,000 residents. As a comparison, Texas has an overall average of 12,248.3 cases per 100,000, according to the report. Based on last week's numbers, 24/7 Wall Street named San Angelo the Texas city with the fastest case growth of any city in Texas, followed by Corpus Christi and Waco. The report used data from state and local health departments, then ranked cities by average number of COVID-19 cases per 100,000 residents from August 2nd to the 30th. Hef's Burgers records through-the-roof sales at newly opened San Angelo location by Elena Edgen and Colin Murphy. Published September 1st. Hef's Burgers has finally returned to San Angelo after a three-year delay with a successful grand opening, according to an employee. The new location at 2902 Sherwood Way, which started construction in 2018, saw a busy crowd about 2 p.m. Wednesday. As employees served customers in the dining room and drive-through, Rob Chickering, corporate trainer with Hef's Burgers, took a moment to talk about the opening. "It's been great," Chickering said. "Sales have been through the roof. The drive-through has been nonstop consistent. It's been fantastic." Though Hef's Burgers has had the drive-through open since August 24th, Monday was the opening day for the dining room, according to the company's Facebook page. "For us, it's all about customer service and the quality and freshness of the food," Chickering said. "From start to finish, we try to treat our guests like you're in your own home." Hef's Burgers began in 2009 with the Hefferman family, who started selling their burgers from a Potosi convenience store. They have locations in Abilene, Early, Eastland, Lubbock, Sweetwater, and Wichita Falls, according to their website.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.